Welcome to Empire Building, the podcast where we talk about building big businesses and even bigger lives. I'm your co-host, Via Williams.
I'm Seychelle Van Poole.
And I'm Wendy Papazan. All right, guys, we are in part two of our wealth building series, kicking off January 2023. Wah, wah. And today we're going to be talking about the six tactics. Actually, we're only going to cover three of them today, but we're going to be talking about the six tactics to build massive wealth. Really, tactics, habits, whatever you call it, whatever you're doing on a daily basis to help you build your money is super important. Literally, guys, the things that you're doing today are determining your future. I'll say that again. Things you're putting in place today are literally determining your future. So again, if you're driving in your car, you're probably going to want to listen to this one later and write some of these things down. And we're going to kick it off with what I arguably would say is that the number one tactic for building massive wealth, the number one habit for building massive wealth is to really focus on your net worth versus your income. Your net worth versus your income. And this is a really different way of thinking about it because as kids, we're taught to, you want to make a lot of income, right? You want to be a doctor, you want to be a lawyer, you want to be a dentist because all of those things give you a big income. However, if you're making $250,000 a year as a doctor and you are spending $251,000 a year, you are what?
Well, you're negative.
You're in debt.
You're in debt.
You're negative. Yeah.
And Wendy, I think that's how most people define wealth.
You are actually negative. You're in debt.
I used to define 100%. Wealth that way. If I made a lot of money, I was wealthy. Yeah. That's how I used to define it.
Yep. How much money can you spend? You know, it's like Morgan Housel tells us, it's the exact opposite. It's not about what you spend. It's about what you don't spend.
Yep. Yeah.
So walk us through who wants to tackle it? Who wants to talk about net worth? Tell us what it is.
Well, you know, when you think about focusing on your net worth to start out, what you first want to figure out is like what you have, right? So it is really, it's tracking your debt and it's tracking your assets. And so for me personally, like my favorite thing is a spreadsheet. I don't need it for everything in my life, but for this, a spreadsheet's a beautiful thing. And, you know, if you need help with putting this together, we have a lot of templates and ways that we walk you through how to do this with our Net Worth Club. So you can go to networthclub.com if this feels overwhelming for you to put together. And we can help. We actually have a whole club geared around this to help you track, build, grow your net worth. So networthclub.com is how you can go to find that. But if you're creating it yourself, really, there's two separate sides. You know, if you're doing a simple spreadsheet, it's all your assets you list and all your debt. And so, you know, let's talk about what are assets actually? And these are things you actually own. So if you own your home, that goes in there. If you own your car, if you own, if you have a checking or a savings account, or maybe you have a 401k or a Roth IRA, you might have investment properties in there. So those are all examples of assets.
You might have
a
business.
Put on there, yeah, a business could be on there as well. And I would love to hear from you guys when you're putting your assets on your sheet. Like for me, I always use a really conservative number. Like I'm not like, this is going to be worth 10x someday, or this is like, if I sold this at the peak of the market, this is what it's worth. Like I went and looked at our numbers last week and our assets for real estate are valued more at fire sale numbers than they are at like peak market numbers. So we are about 10 to 20% below market value for our asset valuations because it's a like, when I'm tracking my net worth, I want to know like a good secure number of like, oh no, the sky is falling and I need to sell something really fast number. I don't know about you guys. I'd be curious how y'all like value quote unquote your assets when you're putting them on your sheet. How do you look at those?
Yeah. Like, so what we do is the first thing we do is we go through all of our cash accounts. So that can be investment, 401k, you know, anything in the bank, right? So that's our first thing. We go through cash. I'm looking at my sheet right now. Mm-hmm. And then what we do is we go through any financial instrument investments, which we don't really have a lot. I mean, I play around with that, but we'll get there. We just don't have a lot right now. But sorry, I'm looking. Yeah. My 401k, my IRA are in my investment column, not in my cash sheet. And then for assets, to your point about valuation, I do put market value for my real estate. I really do. When I run my net worth every 2 to 3 months is kind of when I tend to run it. I know we train to do it monthly, and I encourage you to do it monthly. The fact is, I'm a very authentic person. I'm not going to tell you something I don't do. I do it every 2 or 3 months. And I do market value. I just kind of take a look at Zillow, Redfin, where I think the market is, you know, just kind of my knowledge. And I plug in that number. For business, I don't really add my business. I put a very, because I'm working in my business. I don't think there's a lot of value there without me in it. So I think I plug in, I have this standing like $100,000. I could at least, which is very low. Someone would buy my book of business for much, I would get much more than that, but it's effectively not a factor. And then automobiles, and then I've got like furniture, art, you know, any other physical tangible asset. And then I'm just looking here. That's it.
I also put like if we've invested in a business, like a seed capital, or we've invested in a business and it's like a debt owed coming back to us. I do put that in as a balance too. Wendy, anything else on the asset side before we go to debts and liabilities?
Well, I would just say I offer a different perspective. I just inflate everything for my ego. No, just kidding.
No, you don't.
I just really need to feel good. I just need to.
That is so not.
I just need to pull up my. I just need to pull up my net worth and go, dang, I am dang, awesome.
Just for your ego, you know.
You know how sexy I am. Look at my net worth sheet. It's so sexy.
I'm sexy. Yes. Yeah. So anything else?
I like
No businesses. We've got assets. We got profits, interest, or royalties. We got some of that stuff. Other income, you know, KW, profit share. We log that because it's kind of significant. We got some loans that we've made. And then other assets and investments. Cash
How would you love profit share as an asset? Because it's income.
It is, but you're not going to work for it. Like, it's going to come to you whether or not you show up. So I would consider that to be an asset. And it's willable to your kids.
Well, and we've tracked it. So for the last 22 years, it's gone up about 22% year over year, every year. And that may change at some point, but it's just a trackable asset.
I'm just trying to figure out how to put that on a net worth sheet. $70,000
in profit share.
Right.
You put it like as an asset.
It's just an asset. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. And I
have
to
it
that
under
point.
Other income.
Other income. Okay.
The other one that we put on ours is our, if you have like whole life insurance or like not term insurance, but like whole life insurance, the cash balance of it. So don't put the forever balance on it, but the cash balance on it for current value, we stick on there too. That's the other thing we have on there.
Well, yeah. And I think to be clear, so then, most people's businesses are a massive line item on here. Like just to go back to that, I work in my business, which is why I have that stance. Most billionaires and wealthy, that's all business assets, right? Because they have multiples that they can use and whatever. I just want to be crystal clear that that's like a big
and they could sell
for
it.
A lot of people.
Well, and what we do, how we value our businesses is it was our was essentially our net profit from the previous year. So it just makes it really simple. You know, and I do work in my business, but I don't like, I'm not like selling in my business. And so that's just what we do. Cause I get a salary. So I pay myself a salary and then we just take the net profit, but it's not valued with my salary in it. And it's a decent salary. So I could replace myself and then just the net profit from the year before. And yeah, it's going to, you know, this year it's going to go down that number for my real estate business for sure. So.
Yeah, and,
well,
I mean,
and a lot of our real estate assets,
you know, your assets go up and down with market changes. They will. That's why I kind of like to hedge low, because then if the market adjusts down, I'm still feeling good about it. But you know, you could also inflate them for your ego if you want to. You know,
but don't worry about it. You didn't get to ride the high like we did last year. It was so fun.
I did not ride any of that.
Wah, wah.
I was like, I'm just going to sit over here in conservative land and keep my head down and stay steady.
So we do a couple properties every 2 months. So that way it kind of looks like what was it called? Dollar cost averaging. Averaging, thank you. You kind of do that with your properties. So you kind of, then you're only updating them really maybe once or twice a year.
So. Yeah, that's which is nice. Yeah. So then on your next part of your net worth, you want to take a look at your debts or your liabilities. And so, you know, when we look at what debt is, you know, it's anything that you owe money on. Right. So it could be mortgage loans or investment property loans. It could be credit card debt if you're carrying it, not paying it off every month. Medical debt, student loans, car loans. This can be investments in businesses that you have either taken money from investors and you owe it back, or if you have loaned money out and, you know, all of those fun things. Yeah, Wendy.
Well, I just want, a lot of people ask this question when I teach this, which is people want to know, like, do I put the value of my house and the value of the mortgage on there? Yes, you do. So basically what you're saying is my house is worth $250,000. I owe $200,000 on it. Then at the end of the day, you got $50,000 added to your net worth. Okay. So you want both of them on there. Mm-hmm. So you do want the asset and you want the debt. And because what Seychelle is going to explain is that you take your assets, subtract the debt out, and then that's your net worth number. So,
in the spirit of being conservative, no, it's super good that you explained that. In the spirit of being conservative, there's one thing I do that is not probably legit, but I'll tell you because it might work with other people. So we mentioned earlier in another episode, I have three tuitions right now. I'm just in the thick of it. I've got two kids in college and a one kid in private Catholic school. And so what I do is if I have a contract to pay a debt, that goes on my net worth sheet and I update it. So it's not kosher to do that. Like you don't have to do that. For me, it's really important to make sure it's reflected just for my personal psychology with money. And so I, at the beginning of come August, it's lower than it is when I've paid off everything for the year. Although I've noticed the next year is starting the spring. It's almost like a recurring thing, but my balance has changed.
Yeah.
My balance has changed on that. And I just think if I've signed a contract to pay a debt, that goes on here. And so you can use your discretion.
That is, that's super smart. Yeah, the other thing you want to do is probably create a tax account. So if you own properties outright and, you know, in Texas, property taxes are very, very significant. So you can't include that.
Yeah.
Include that. So have a separate account and then don't include that in your net worth.
Like, what do you consider good debt versus bad debt?
Well, real estate debt's good debt usually as long as you're not, as long as you're, you know, breaking even or cash flowing. Investing in businesses.
Yeah, I would say.
Go ahead, Ben. I was going to say, to me, it comes down to the interest rate you're paying out. And so like credit card debt is a super high interest rate. And so it is more expensive to carry, you know, credit card debt in large amounts over a long period of time than it is to pay that off quicker and maybe, you know, than what fast paying on your real estate. If you had the same amount of cash, instead of making two extra payments on your real estate a year at a lower interest rate, you might make sure that credit card debt is wiped first. So for me, it's when we're ever looking at consolidating debt, it's getting rid of the highest interest rate first, highest interest rate, lowest balance, and then stacking it down.
Well, I'll just push back on that a little bit. I think if you can have a high interest rate on a piece of real estate and it can still cash flow for you.
Yeah, it's about return.
So, that's fair.
If it's not a cash flowing asset, then absolutely. Yeah, get rid of it. If you've got a depreciating asset, which is what I would consider like a car loan, you know, a car essentially the minute you drive it off the lot, it loses 10% of the value. So you buy a car for $50,000, the minute you drive it off the lot, you've lost $5,000. It's basically like taking $5,000 and throwing it out the window the second you drive off the lot. Okay. You could buy a 1 year car, a car that's 1 year old, right? For $45,000 and you're not going to lose that right away. Right. Mm-hmm. You're going to pay less and you're not going to lose that money right away. And so anything that's going down in value, you really don't want to have much debt on it at all unless it's cash flowing. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So, that's but right. like mm-hmm. to Seychelle's point, if you've got debt and we're not going to really go into debt, like Dave Ramsey and lots of other people talk about have really great strategies for debt. But yeah, you want to think about things that have a higher interest rate as worse. Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. And then the last thing I would say when you're tracking your net worth is really to look at what your goals are. And we just in the last episode talked about like, what's your FU number and what is your cash flow goal? And like, how do you define success around that? And I think the same thing can be done on your net worth side of really looking at what your net worth goal is, understanding why that's important to you, tying that to your FU number, and then creating your vision for your life around what that looks like. And so if you know, it could be, you know, just a couple of examples, you know, I think the first one we talk about in Net Worth Club is becoming a net worth millionaire, right? A lot of people in this country will never say that that has been achieved by them. And, you know, to have that, and especially all three of us and Sarah, who's not on today, but also included in that, all four of us, you know, are in the real estate industry. One of the fastest ways to become a net worth millionaire is to buy property and to be smart with your investments in real estate. That's one of the fastest ways to wealth in this country. So net worth millionaire is an opportunity there to have 10 properties that are cash flowing or 10 properties that are worth a certain amount is another easy way to do that. You could also look at it as like, I want to have X amount in passive income a year or a month, which we talked about with your FU number. So it's really defining what your financial goals are and then having clarity around where your assets are and your debts are so that you can go after it and see your progress. And tracking it month over month is something we weren't doing until 2021. We'd tracked it forever, but not month over month with the progress. And I will say that's like a hack we added. And it's been so cool just to be able to look back, even with some of the micro changes that we've made in addition to the bigger ones, to see that needle move.
As a leader, it can be lonely. You're ready to grow and you realize you need the right community to get you there. With Empire Circle, you'll be surrounded by driven, adventurous women who want more in business and in life. You'll get real-time feedback, personalized guidance, and honest advice from seasoned leaders who have built businesses and net worths in the hundreds of millions, all while living their big lives. If this sounds like the fuel you need to level up your business and your life, Empire Circle is absolutely for you. You can get more information at herbestlife.com by clicking on Empire Circle. Come and let's build your empire together.
It's and you know, like we said, of all of the tactics that we're going to talk about, net worth is the most important one. I recommend tracking it monthly. And if you need accountability around that, then join a net worth club. You know, Jay and I always talked about we want to help people become millionaires. And I turned to him one day and I said, well, what are we actually doing to help people? So that's when we started our Hot Millionaire Club on our real estate team, and a bunch of people from Jay's team also join us now. And then that's how we started Net Worth Club, you know, with our sister business, Her Best Life. And actually, if you guys are thinking like, gosh, I really need accountability around tracking my net worth, then I would highly encourage you to join Net Worth Club. It's very low. It's like $25 a month. And it's going to be the best, trust me, the best investment you can make in yourself. And we've actually got a deal going on. I'm not here to like sell you guys, but I do believe this is super important. And so if you go to herbestlife.com/masterclasses, you can get the Her Rich Life on demand and bundled with the Net Worth Club using our special code of EBP, right? For Empire Building Podcast, listeners only. EBP, you can get both of those for $449 for the whole year.
And we'll put that in show notes, right, Wendy?
Yep. I'm putting it in show notes right now for you guys.
Yep. And that's a good deal because prices went up on January 1st. So,
yeah. Perfect. That's awesome. So then what would you say is tactic two when we're talking about building massive wealth? What's the next one?
Well, I think tactic two is really say no to say yes, right? Say no so that you can say yes to the things that matter most. And essentially, when we're thinking about money, this is delayed gratification. I can remember going over to my sister's house, who I love dearly. And, you know, she's just is not wealthy. And she had a lot of like magazines and gum and like a lot of those things that you see in the checkout line at Target, right? Yeah. Where you're just in that line at Target and you just like, oh, I'm going to grab a magazine. I'm going to grab a, you know, $4 container of gum or whatever. And she has these all over the place at her house. And I just know that I just never buy that stuff, which is, there's nothing wrong with that. There's like nothing wrong with that. But it's like the kind of spontaneity around it where all of a sudden you're just adding, maybe you've got a $100 bill at Target. And all of a sudden it's $110 because you pulled a magazine from Oprah and you've got a thing of gum. And if those are your things, those are your things. But for most people, it's like, I'll just put this in the cart. So literally adding 10%, right, to your lifestyle by doing things like that. And I just thought to myself, I just never buy that stuff. And that's because I have this say no to say yes. Like we've been very clear and intentional and really put our wealth building goals first so that we can look up and really be where we are today, which is financially free. You know, we hit our FU number quite a while ago and really to be able to do whatever we want. But that took 10 years of delayed gratification, right? That's not fun.
Which is huge. You know? Yeah. Which is huge.
Okay. So let's talk to the people who are opposite of that, who are prone to buy the Oprah magazine and the gum. Me. Pick me. because I, you know, this is a really huge, huge focus in my life and topic. And I see it in my finances and in my weight and my health. You know, lifetime habit of instant gratification, right? And awareness is the first step in that. And then the second is figuring it out. So I have a hack. Now, this may not be the purest hack, meaning there's probably a lot of people listening that are like, well, you're not really curing it, right? You know, I'm going to tell you my hack anyway. So we got $1 million portfolio this year, $985,000 portfolio as of the last time I tracked my net worth, which was in the last week. And we bought about 8 properties this year. And what my hack is that,
That's awesome. I'm over here clapping, that's awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, I feel great about it.
Awesome.
And I look at what we spent to get there. So we spent all in cash with repairs and, well, that's not actually, it's probably about $350,000 cash that we spent for that. Total package. So that's just cash. That's not debt. That's cash, right? And I look at that $350,000, and I know that sounds like a lot of money. We had some saved up walking into this. So, you know, we didn't generate it. Just be clear. We walked into this with about $250,000 saved up, and then the other $130,000 we funded throughout the year. Here's my point in sharing that with you. I have blown and squandered $350,000 in more ways than I can share. Cruises, vacations, none of which I necessarily regret, like they're great memories, but clothes, designer, you name it. I can blow a lot of money. That is my inclination. I am that instant gratification person. I am the complete opposite of these amazing women who have lived this life of discipline and delayed gratification. And so what I did was I just replaced the hunger. And I just sort of said, look, I want to get hungry for assets and I want to get hungry for net worth. And I scratched that itch in a different way. And for me, that worked. You know, I switched my passion and the way I get gratified, the dopamine hits that I was getting from the other things, I simply changed to that. What I have noticed is, because I have a big belief in my life when I've made big change, behavior comes first, mindset second. Not everybody teaches that. For me, behavior, same with weight loss. If I just do, I don't want to work out. I don't want to eat right. So I have to change the behavior first, reluctantly, and then my brain starts following. So now, you know, a year or so into this journey, it's really been a 4-year journey, but so yeah, 4 years into this journey, I have a much better mindset about delayed gratification, but it changed the way I changed the behavior originally was substitution. Mm-hmm. Right or wrong, that's what I did. You know, I just put a higher value on it. Yeah.
Well, you know what? Know thyself is one of the first things of being an investor, right? Is know thyself. And I'm thinking to Sarah's health episode when she said nothing tastes as good as healthy feels. Yeah. And what I'm hearing you say is nothing feels as good as wealthy does, right? And
Great analogy.
It is. It's so awesome hearing that substitution and replacement of one dopamine for another. You're replacing that gratification with something that truly is feeding you today and the future. So I want to take a moment and applaud you for that, because I know that that has been something where you had to become aware, very intentional, very mindful of it. And then you had to act, which is the second hardest part of that. And you've done it in a massive way. And it's been really, really cool to watch. So I want to give you huge kudos, because it's been really cool.
Thank you. It's not for kudos. Yeah. I just want other people who, you know, are more impulsive like I am to hear that, you know, you can do it. You can do it. You just have to figure it out.
Yeah, you're doing it for you. You're not doing it for attention. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's also kind of examining your patterns, right? Mm-hmm. It's like a life examined, right? Is a life worth living? And just understanding like what made you the way that you were. Like nobody is a compulsive shopper at age 2. You know, it's not something you're born with. And just thinking back on like, oh gosh, well, why do I want to buy that purse when I know it's going to hurt my family? You know, it's like, especially coming off of, you know, Christmas, right? We're here in January of 2023, and a lot of people are looking and thinking like, wow, I'm in so much debt. You know, what is it that made you do that? Like I always tell people, I don't need to go in debt to show people that I love them. Yeah. Right? Or I don't need to go into debt to make myself just feel good, right? But understanding why some people do need to do that. Like what was it about your upbringing or the way you saw life, or, you know, what are those things? And just thinking about that.
And I know we're going to move on to the third one. My really, really great point. And my wrap up on that is that comes, the awareness of that, cause I'm about 4 years into this journey. And so for all of you listening who maybe relate to that, it does come, that analysis comes over time, because I really have truly lost my desire and my drive to get a lot of that stuff, right? But I didn't try to overanalyze it at first. And I don't think there's a right or wrong. I simply tried to change my behavior at first. It wasn't good. I was kicking and screaming, like it wasn't fun. I just want to be clear. I wasn't that analytical and reflective on year one. On year one, it felt like scarcity, like I was losing a lot of fun things, you know. We have not traveled as much as I would like to, and, you know, various things. But Wendy, you're right. Over time, you do get more reflective over that, I think. And then the wins that came that I might have felt temporarily from those other purchases are now replaced by the deep gratification and satisfaction and feeling of security I have for me and my family of building my net worth.
So. Wow. That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, yeah. And just to end kind of that last tactic, which is don't give up what you want most for what you want now. Richard Scott said that. So
perfect. Mm-hmm.
All right. So our tactic number 3 is to really pay your investment fund first. And that, you know, it's exactly what you're saying, Via, which is to what a lot of people do is they get paid and they buy all the things that they want or need, and whatever's left over, then they dump that into savings and they dump that into their investment account. And really adopting a different mindset around that, which is to pay your investment fund first, is a massive, massive habit. When Jay and I started to go down our investment journey, we were both, we didn't have businesses. We're, you know, young, starting out in our careers. And I worked for the state of Texas. Jay was the lowest paid employee at Keller Williams International. And I share that not to like make Jay embarrassed, but I think a lot of people, when I share my story, people are like, oh, well, Jay works for Gary and you have this big real estate team and blah, 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 blah. And the reality is we started out very modestly. And so what we did is we said, okay, we're going to take $1,500 a month and we're going to put that in a totally separate account. And that account is not connected to our bank. It's in a completely different bank. We don't have access to it. It's not easy to transfer back and forth. We just made it very, very difficult for us to get. And then we were both putting money into that automatically from both of our paychecks every single month. And that habit was very, very, very powerful. So paying your investment fund first is, it's everything.
Yeah.
I love that.
And I mean, not everyone can start off that way, Wendy. And so, you know, that's a goal to get there. This is the time to talk about side hustles and bringing in extra income.
Yeah.
There's a moment of pain. What I did is remargined my life. I sold my house. I mean,
we literally
made our expenses. I think we, you know, about 2/3 of our previous expenses so that we could kind of do that.
Yeah.
So you can be drastic, you can be gradual about it. You can either make more income or you can decrease expenses.
Yeah.
But if you can't do that right away, you know, that's what one would aspire to. That's what you would aspire
to. And I would argue that so you can do it in a very drastic way. So if you're thinking like, ooh, I don't have an extra $1,500 in my budget. And we're not like, I like a nice cocktail. Like I like to go out for coffee. I like to do things with friends. So this idea of like penny pinching was never really my thing.
Right.
And so what we did starting out is actually we did kind of the opposite of what Via did is we kept our housing expenses very low. So 50% of a typical American budget is spent on transportation and housing. So if you can somehow slash those as a part of your budget, which is exactly what Via did, right? You remargined your life. That's a great way to put it. You can actually come up with enough money to start an investment account. And I had a young woman on my real estate team. She came to me and she said, Wendy, I really want to buy my first house in a year. And she said, I just don't know how to do it. I'm looking at all my expenses. I just don't know how I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. And so I said, let's look at your budget. And she was spending about $1,700 a month in an apartment in downtown Austin, furnished apartment in downtown Austin, living alone. And I said to her, that's got to go. And she's like, well, I really like that. You know, I like living downtown. I like having this sweet furnished place. You know, I like having my privacy. You know, I work with people a lot. And I was like, well, that's the main thing that you've got to do. So show me how you're going to fix that. So she moved out of her furnished apartment in downtown Austin. And she moved into a house with two other roommates further from downtown, you know, not in necessarily like the hottest location in Austin. And her monthly rent went from $1,700 to $600 a month. This is actually possible for everybody listening, for almost everybody listening.
Yeah.
And so she took that $1,100 and she put it into an account where she paid her investment fund first. She said, I now have $1,100 a month. And within 1 year, she was able to buy her first home. That's how you do it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's
exactly what Via did. So you either sell your $2 million house and move into a $1 million house, which is basically what you did, right?
That's what I did. Yeah.
Or if you're renting, you think about how can I live with some roommates? And I've actually heard of, I talked with a woman, I was on her podcast. I can't remember her name. She's up in Dallas. And they did exactly that. They sold their house and they moved into an apartment. They were a young family. They had two young kids. And that's how they were able to save enough money to buy that first investment.
Nick and I stayed in an apartment for, through our first two property purchases.
Yeah.
And it was a really low, not great. I mean, you know, we weren't living in the slums, but it was not like the bougiest house. Mm-hmm. It was just living way, way, way below. I mean, we had patio furniture as our dining table for a while, not because we were trying to slum it, but just we had like, just like we returned our wedding gifts, we just had really big goals of the wealth side we were wanting to build. And that was more important than anything else that we had at the time. And so we just sacrificed in other areas. I'm not saying you need to go to that extent, but it did. We were at the age where, you know, if you're in your 20s, early 30s, and you're hearing this, you know, and you're experiencing that, there are things you could do pretty easily that would stack up your cash pretty fast.
Well, and you can also house hack. And so I'm coaching an agent right now and a real estate agent. And we had a coaching session this week. And we're in a tight real estate market for real estate, and a lot of agents are not making the same income. Yeah. And so we started looking at, I said, can you short-term rent? Can you Airbnb your basement, your lower floor? And that's exactly what he's going to work on over the next 30 to 45 days is, you know, getting that ready to short-term rent. I said, you need to, you know, he has homework. He's going to research what he think he can get, how many nights he can get, you know, and all these things. So, you know, he's not going to sell that asset, but he's going to hopefully, you know, squeeze some income out of it.
Yeah. Well, and I have multiple examples of people in my world. You know, I had a woman who worked with me on my real estate team. She was actually married. She was a young mom. She had a baby, and they knew they wanted to save up for their next investment property. So they got a roommate, which is hard for a lot of people to understand. You know, I mean, if you travel overseas, you've got five, sometimes you go to countries and they've got five people living in each room, but here we like our space, you know? And that may not work for you, but think about like, gosh, if you could get a roommate for 6 months, 3 months, get a side hustle like Bia was talking about for 3 months, drive Uber for 4 months, like probably if you're working a, you know, a regular job, you've got at least 8 hours a day where you're probably not doing much with it, spending time with family, watching TV, whatever that looks like, get a side hustle, right? Get a roommate. And it doesn't have to be forever. Right. It's just until you hit your goal so that you so that you can do tactic three, which is to pay your investment fund first. And So I'll just wrap up this one. This was second part of our 6-part series on wealth building. And today was a really important one. Today's a hard one. Say no to say yes. Hard tactic. It's essentially delayed gratification, right? You might feel poor for a while, right? You might feel poor for a while if you guys are implementing this tactic. So make sure you implement that one. Oh, and I forgot the most important one, net worth. I don't know what I was thinking there. I went straight to tactic two. So tactic one, track your net worth, track it monthly, okay? Tactic two, say no to say yes. And the great thing about tactic one and two is that if you're tracking your net worth, it makes you less likely to buy stuff, okay? So if you're tracking your net worth and you buy a new sofa, guess what happens to your net worth? Hey, it goes down. Right? You don't want that. And then you've got number three, which is to take some of that extra income and pay your investment fund first. So stay tuned, guys, for episode three, which is going to be another three tactics on wealth building, building massive wealth. And don't forget to go out there and build big businesses and even bigger lives. Bye, guys.
Thanks, love everyone. It. Bye, guys. Just a reminder, you guys, as we are running through this awesome wealth building and money series with you, we just want to give you a quick blanket reminder, because our friends at Keller Williams and the legal team would thank us for it, that we are not financial advisors, CPA, tax advisors, or anyone that is tied to your individual finances. So if you are wanting more information about this, these are tips, ideas, tactics, and ways in which you can build wealth, but always find a seasoned professional that is a seasoned professional in this specific field that you're needing help with to assist you in your finance, tax, or wealth building journey.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not KWRI and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information.